Hi, this is Michael Waitz, and welcome to AIP's News Roundup with Teresa Blissing, the founder of AIP, and Rahul Mathur, our very own special AIP ambassador, coming to you from True Digital Park. How is everybody doing today?
Very good, Michael. Thank you so much. How are you, Rahul? How is cold London?
I'm good. It is cold. Thank you for asking me. But yeah, it's super cool to have all three of us back on the show again, Teresa, and looking forward to this one. And thanks, Michael, for inviting me.
Oh, please. It's my pleasure. Look, let's get right to it. As always, lots to cover. So let's start with Gojek. Let's start with Indonesia, actually, right? Gojek and Pasarpolis. Pasarpolis is a company that we've had on. What is that? Cliosan, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about this thing that they've announced with the knowledge that Gojek is an investor in Pasarpolis. So what do we think about this news?
As you rightly mentioned, Pasarpolis was started basically with investments from Gojek as well as Tokopedia and Traveloka,
right.
So the three unicorns in Indonesia. And now they are getting on to Grab's new platform. Gojek's new platform. So Gojek is considered a super app, but if you really look at their products, they have different subdomains. And what they now have is this so-called third-party platform. Where they start to launch new services. One will be GoSure, which they are doing together with Pasarpolis to offer insurance around travel, motor, I believe, and device protection. But on this platform, they are also offering news and services which are fairly similar to like a crowdfunding campaign. I believe it's called Go Give, where basically people from Indonesia can make a cause. For example, if the child gets sick or something, they can use this platform to raise money. And so this is a new platform that Gojek is launching there, and one part is with Pasarpolis, which I believe is bringing in the license they will need to sell the insurance products via this app.
So Pasarpolis is a full stack, right? So does this mean that, or is it, I'm asking, I'm just trying to remember. And if it is, then that means that Gojek is actually getting into the insurance business directly.
No. Pasarpolis is considered an intermediary, so they are working with insurance companies to get the coverage, right? But they have the broker license, right? So in order to sell insurance, you will need a broker license. And that is what Pasarpolis is bringing in here, and obviously also their experience and all the processes to provide this like digital insurance coverages to Gojek's users.
Got it. Rahul, do you have any comment on this?
No, I think I just probably build off what Teresa said there with the whole Pasarpolis, Gojek moving into something called GoGive, which is their, you know, crowdfunding, almost like a crowd donation platform. It somehow reminds me of what Waterdrop Mutual in China has done. So if you
remember, that's what I was thinking, right?
This was the Tencent, not Tencent owned, but Tencent investee company, which is doing, Mutual Aid, which is a competitor to Ant Financial's Xianghu Bao. And actually, Waterdrop Mutual has about 300 million monthly active users on that crowdfunding platform. And if you go to the website, you can actually see, you know, a stream of requests coming in real time. So I think it's very interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it works in the context of the Indonesian insurance regulation. But yeah, Pasarpolis is pretty much like a Toffee Insurance in India. It's the same analog, you know, both are brokers, both are helping in product innovation for platform economy players. And seems like this is going to be one to watch.
Got it. Okay. Should we move on to Grab? So I think this news is actually kind of significant in a way. So Grab is announcing that they've acquired the wealth tech startup Bento. And now Bento, I don't know what you guys think, but Bento is like Stashaway or Crystal.ai, lots of these robo-advisors out there. I don't know, some of them saying they have all these proprietary investment methods. I think part of the significance here, though, and I'm open to your opinions, is that Grab is now actually has their own financial services provider. It's a real company with a real product. They allow you to invest with them into the ETF market. So it's not just brokerage, right? Do you think that this may have some precursor to them doing the same thing in the insurance business, as opposed to just being an intermediary, then acquiring someone who does this? What do you guys think?
Well, Bento is a robo-advisory service, right? So we are not yet there where we say, okay, they provide their own products and potentially get their own license. So I guess this is to plug into the app that Grab is using, if it is their long-standing ride-hailing app, or if they're also doing something similar, we're like Gojek, developing a complete new platform to offer these financial services to. We will see. But I think that that is just to serve customers better and have like more support through chatbots and serve customers on financial products. So this is about wealth tech. But I wouldn't be surprised if they could use the same technology also for other financial products.
Yeah, and I mean, what does this mean for their, like I said, their insurance partnerships, but also their potential digital banking license that we know that they've applied for?
Yes, so the digital banking license, the results should come in June, July this year. And that's when they know they get the license. Then they still have to establish that. So I think we won't be seeing any results from the digital banking license before 2021, maybe even 2022, until they can go live with a digital bank. But of course, you're right. They are already building the infrastructure to offer them these services, and then basically can just switch from a provider they are working with at the moment, right? Like a bank they are partnering with at the moment, and then switch to their own virtual bank.
I mean, spot on, right? The way I sort of think about this is exactly what Amazon does, right? Amazon has a marketplace or a captive user base, but also not only offers third-party products, but also offers its own products. So what I think was going to happen here is, yes, you're both are right. You're going to, if Grab actually gets that digital bank license with Singtel, then Bento becomes the retail wealth management division. Potentially in the future, Singapore would launch, and this is just a precursor, like you're probably alluding to, Michael, they could also end up with a digital insurance license, right? But this would be, again, an Amazon-like play where they're offering third-party providers, you know, APIs into their marketplace to sell, but they're also offering their own almost like white label products coming from their own subsidiaries. So this is an Amazon play. I think it's pretty smart.
Okay, let's move to India. I think this is actually really interesting as well. So Echo, another company that we've had on the show and that we spoke to, had a really good broadcast with them, raised a lot of money already, but now they're raising $4.2 million in debt funding. Why would they do this instead of raising more equity and at this size, since they've already raised a ton of other equity cash? What is this $4.2 million buy them in venture debt?
Yes, it's an interesting one, right? First of all, venture debt is probably picking up in India quite quickly over the past, I'd say, 2 or 3 years. Akko's supposedly going to get $4.2 million from, I guess, one of the two premier debt funds in India called Alteria Capital, the other one being Trifecta Capital. This is slightly different from, for lack of words, pure place debt, because venture debt is almost like, I guess, mezzanine tranche debt for public market investors. What these sort of, what venture debt investors do is they sort of try to follow venture capital investors in a round. So this makes sense, because if you know, Echo just closed about 36 million in a round, which saw Bansal top up. What's presumably going to happen is this 4.2 million is going to get locked in as regulatory capital, because what typically ends up happening with venture debt rounds is you get invested in the infrastructure for supply chain. So the analog in insurance for infrastructure for supply chain is regulatory capital. And there are certain regulations around what kind of tiered capital you can put in as reg capital. So this is probably a play there. So it's more around them expanding their solvency base to, I guess, prepare to scale up even further.
Yeah, it just seems small to me. In the context of the amount of money they've already raised, which is not small. Like you said, who is it? Binny upped his stake in this thing. So I'm just curious why they would do that size. Like if they did 50 million, I would understand. But 4.2, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Teresa, what do you think?
Well, I agree with you. But on the other hand, it's a different type of funding, right? So it's debt funding in this case. still, 4.2 million is nice to have. There are other startups out there. I can tell you, they would be thrilled about, you know, the small 4.2 million. So
I got it. So do we want to talk for a second on these, on the standalone microinsurance companies, or do we just want to move on to WhatsApp?
Yeah, WhatsApp, I think it's very surprising for me, and I think, oh, finally WhatsApp is in the e-wallet game as well, right? Because we have seen this here in Asia, first of all with WeChat, right? But then also Line. Exactly. They're already all in the game. And so WhatsApp seems to be a bit late. Quite interesting. They are launching in India already. Would have guessed that Indonesia is a big market for them as well, because I know in Indonesia, people seem to predominantly use WhatsApp, where in other parts it's more like Line or WeChat in Asia.
In
Indonesia, you already have big competition with Gojek, GoPay, the other provider. Can't think of the name. OVO, I believe it is. So I'm not sure about the e-wallet payment market in India.
It's a fairly interesting one, right? So on average, India, first of all, has something called the Unified Payments Interface, so UPI, which is like these payment rails for, you know, all platforms to effectively interoperate with each other. And WhatsApp Pay will pretty much be another UPI platform. There are already some sort of regulations, or I guess concerns, around UPI fees dropping to zero, which means WhatsApp Pay may actually end up going from being the silver bullet that could finally get WhatsApp some revenue through the door to just another free service that WhatsApp is offering, which is pretty much what it has been for the past how many ever years. You can, you know, argue it's a loss leader or lead generator, but that's, you know, a different story. It's a huge market, right? So WhatsApp Pay has been allowed to, I believe, a pilot with about 1 million customers. What this effectively means is they're now going to roll out in almost like a tranche basis, with the first tranche being about 10 million users. And WhatsApp pretty much has like 400 million monthly active users, where pretty much most of them are daily users in India. And
that's a lot of—
Yeah, and some of its competitors, for example, like a Paytm, a PhonePe, and a Google Pay, are in the range of about 200 to 240 million transactions per month, with 400 million users already on your platform, and many people using it multiple times daily. Could this be like a 500 million transactions a month, even a billion transactions a month, right? So there's a huge, huge opportunity to capture the payments market. But my real question is, where is WhatsApp going to make money here if UPI fees drop to zero?
Right, because didn't we make the point during the last news roundup that one of the reasons why companies like Paytm were actually getting into the insurance business was because the payments business was collapsing to a zero-fee business, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So very interesting. And I also think, maybe it's just the cynic in me that thinks part of this, I love the fact that Facebook doesn't do payments in India, or maybe they do, but not at any scale. But they're using WhatsApp maybe because the brand is better than Facebook Messenger. I don't know, because I don't know what Facebook take up is in India. But it's interesting to me that they're using the WhatsApp brand to do this.
It's very funny, right? And I also sort of remind people, we're going a little off topic here, but now when you open WhatsApp, you actually see WhatsApp owned by Facebook.
By Facebook, yeah. I thought that was pretty funny.
Which I find very strange. But sort of quickly jumping back to the point on insurance, right, Michael? We've already seen Paytm jump into insurance. PhonePe, which is Paytm's competitor.
The other one, yeah.
API space, is also doing insurance.
Yep.
Flipkart now has a head of its own insurance business. It was a job I saw pop up sometime back, and someone get recruited onto it. And Amazon has a payment app called Amazon Pay. They are also in the process of launching insurance. And actually, because of the ACO investment, you can already buy a lot of white label insurance on their platform in India.
Yeah, Amazon's been pretty strategic as well. We talked about this once, about investing in ACO. So that's their way in there too. That combination seems pretty powerful, particularly with the other investors in ACO, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Teresa, if you don't have anything else, let's move on to Korea.
What about the micro insurance news coming out of India? I was keen to hear Raoul's comments on that one as well, because microinsurance is a tricky one, right? There's large potential. Yep. There's a huge market to capture, but it's crazy difficult to get to these people because on the one hand, the literacy in like the lower income groups on financial products, but also just the fact that you have like no margin or very limited margin to spend on distribution because the you know we are talking about micro premiums. And Michael, we had Rick on the show. I met Rick when I was at InsurTech Insight in Hong Kong, and you recorded with him this super interesting podcast, how they are offering micro insurance for watching ads, right?
Yep.
And I think that's a very interesting way to get people in touch with financial products from like low income groups, and where you use these kind of platforms as the distribution platform. And now the news on the standalone micro insurance companies coming out of India. So quite keen to hear Raoul's comments on that one.
It's an interesting one, right? Like you said, Elisa, there are quite a few challenges around distribution of micro insurance products, mainly because it's sometimes challenging to go fully digital because these people may not be fully connected. You know, they just may not be literate enough or trust the insurance company enough. So you sometimes need those boots on ground. What India has pretty much done is over the past month or so come out with, I guess, two pieces of regulation. The first is they're considering opening up a new form of insurance license, which is purely focused on micro insurance. What this means is it sort of really reduces the capital and regulation hurdles to actually become a full-fledged insurance company. But then the caveat is you can only sell micro insurance. This is quite similar to what Justin Case has in Japan, right, with the small license insurance, where you have a cap on sum assured and the kind of policies you can write. The regulation is about 50 or 60 pages in terms of changes to micro insurance in India. But I guess the sort of high level summary is they've increased the policy value for what sort of constitutes micro insurance. They've changed the commission structures to make it a bit more agent friendly. And they've also changed the fact that if you are a micro insurance agent, you're already licensed by the IRDA.
Got it.
And yeah, I'm supposed to upload something on Thursday. We're recording this on a Wednesday morning. But overall, positive regulation for insurance is slowly becoming an enabler, and that's a good sign.
Good stuff. Okay, do we want to talk more about this digital transformation of the insurance industry in Korea? There was some talk with, who is it, Samsung and Samsung Fire Marine and KakaoPay announcing something. What do you guys think about this one?
Well, we talked about this one before. So Samsung Fire and Marine Insurance, which is the largest non-life insurance firm in South Korea, and their partnership with Kakao, which is also another messenger service, mobile messenger service. And as you rightly said, they also have the Kakao Pay function, so another mobile wallet. Coming out of a messenger service app. And Raoul, we talked about this, I think, a couple of months ago, that they were planning to start like a digital insurance company. And it looks like that they now got the go from the Korean regulator to set up this JV between Samsung Fire and Marine Insurance and Kakao Pay to form like a digital insurance company. And I believe just earlier this year in January, we just had Carrot Insurance who got this license as well, which is from Hyundai Motor Group and I believe one of the telcos, a joint venture. Just on a side note, I was invited to speak at a major conference there later this year. So very excited to be on the ground and talk to some of the startups and digital insurers there in person. Because we see more and more out of Korea when it comes to insurtech and digital insurance companies, right? So the first one we had was Small Tickets. with Julie, right? Fairly early when we started this podcast. And I think she was the first insurtech that was set up in Korea. And now we are seeing more and more coming out of this market. So definitely exciting one to watch.
That'll be awesome. She was really super, by the way.
Yeah, the interesting part about this news, Teresa, is of course they finally got the license, but Kakao Pay actually has roughly half of the country's population on its payment platform. They've also got Kakao Bank, and now you pretty much have Kakao Insurance, which just blew my mind for a second there. So what I find super interesting here is they're now actually going to be a digital insurance company on day one, which pretty much has a backdoor to distribute insurance to about half the country's population via the payments app and their bank. And bank assurance is typically one of the biggest, I guess, for lack of words, distribution channels for insurance in quite a few Asian economies. I don't know whether it's true for South Korea, but this is all... And going back to Michael's point, Michael, this is exactly what someone like a Grab could do, right? So Grab may have its financial, it's a bank, digital bank, and it may also get a digital insurance company. So it's definitely a case study to watch, if nothing else.
Right. Yeah. And Korea is different than the rest of Asia in a way. I mean, more similar to Japan. The penetration for life insurance alone is 85, probably even closer to 90%. So just interesting to see more people getting into that market.
You just said something quite interesting, right? So the more mature market in Asia, like Japan and Korea, when it comes to insurance, are in terms of innovation, I have the feeling, often a little bit behind. Maybe because the insurance companies there, they are so comfortable with their markets. They, you know, you don't have a lot of growth opportunities in those markets because it's already really mature and saturated. Whereas in Southeast Asia, you have huge market growth in a lot of segments. And so maybe that's why we are seeing more innovation happening in Southeast Asia, because there are so many opportunities, while in Korea and Japan, insurers are comfortable and it takes a bit more to disrupt this industry.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that was one of the things that Chang Li said in last week's episode, but also that Kazuhata said when we talked to him from Just In Case, is that in a way they innovate externally because these big Japanese insurance companies are just so comfortable and so powerful as well. So let's talk about some product innovation. We'll switch gears a little bit. Do we want to talk about what Etika recently launched? I love this acronym they have, Ecleva. I'm not sure anybody's going to use that. The Etika Claims Express Video Assist. What do we think about this thing?
Well, Etika is originally coming out of Malaysia, and the company, the majority shareholder here is Maybank from Malaysia. And I believe they have launched the same claims process already in Malaysia last year or the year before, and are now rolling it out in Singapore as well. The news article doesn't say anything about the partner, but I know in Malaysia they were working together with Sitecall, which is an insurtech coming out of the US, and what they provide is basically the technology that when you have a motor accident, you can use your smartphone to call your insurer, have a video call, and then also record the damages, and basically the claims adjuster can take over the camera, can zoom in, etc., in order to speed up the claims management process and make it also more convenient for the customers. And yeah, it looks like they are also rolling the same program or the same technology out in Singapore as they have already in Malaysia.
I like how it says the audio function works like a regular phone, like it would work any other way.
Yeah, it's not... I mean, it's interesting that they chose a company coming from the US, but Sitecall, they are working with a number of insurance companies, are very established, also operating with Etika in Malaysia. And as I said, I'm pretty sure they are also doing the tech for the one in Singapore.
Fabulous.
It makes sense, right? You're pretty much using computer vision to assess damage, and you've got the human being behind there just to make the process feel a little, I guess, nicer, or maybe a bit more human, because claims is the litmus test for insurance. Yeah, quite good. Happy to see that. Can't say anything more.
Okay, let's talk about this Great Eastern product. They're launching a fitness calculator called Fit Age. Can we dig in a little bit about this? I mean, is this a wearable product? Like, what exactly is this, and how does it compete with some of the other things that are out there that aren't related to just kind of one company?
Yeah, well, the Fit Age seems to be part of their health app called Get Great, which is just part of their like wellness product. And this news alone, I'm not sure if I would normally cover it in this episode. I mean, it's just like another wellness product, right? Don't get me wrong. They are all great, but they are all like fairly the same. Just what I found interesting that the same month, same week, also AXA announced a partnership with ClassPass, which is the company, I believe, coming out of the U.S. They bought Guava Pass here in Southeast Asia. Michael, you might remember, it's like this app where you can book gym classes. So in Southeast Asia, it was Guava Pass. They were acquired by ClassPass, which is coming out of the U.S., and now they partner with AXA. And Great Eastern is offering this like Fit Age edition, where they apparently use data from wearable devices. But at the end, it's all basically the same. It's offering these wellness products to their customers. They seem to do like a lot of in Singapore now. I'm always curious because the adoption rate of these wellness products, and it has a lot to do with the prevention, is actually not that strong. The initial idea comes from a South African company called Discovery. They have developed the Vitality product in South Africa, I think already 20 years ago, and were super successful with it. But rolling it out to Asia and to other markets has not been as successful as they have been in South Africa. The insurance companies are still going with it and adding more and more products around health and wellness to their policy coverages. So I'm not sure. Raul, do you see a similar trend in the UK?
Yeah, to be honest with you, everyone wants to launch something that's wellness or user engagement related. I could probably list like 5 or 6 startups coming out every year, which are trying to do
thinking the same thing,
some form of like gamification for health or life insurance. I always kind of point out is what if your customer just doesn't want to engage with you? Because in this case...
What if they just want to be left alone?
Yeah, because... when I kind of looked at the reward, it was about $110. I don't know how much people end up paying for their health or life insurance premium. If you use the B is equal to MAT framework for like customer engagement, which is the behavior is driven by, I guess, motivations, ability, and a trigger to do so. If you're giving someone $110 and their premium is like $5,000, they just don't have the motivation. So you have to make sure the potential reward or the upside is pretty significant, like even 10 to 15% of policy value. But then it goes back to Teresa's point, is there any evidence regarding efficacy of this approach? I don't know, right?
Insurance companies are trying these products to get more engagement with their customers, right? So that's the idea. It's at the end, on the one hand, a bit of a marketing tool. That also goes in hand with the announcement of Aetna and their DNA testing, which they are rolling out in cooperation with Prenetics. Also, a number of companies in Asia have partnered with Prenetics. I know Generali in Indonesia, Muangthai Life in Thailand, right? And offering like these additional services is often a marketing tool and trying to get higher engagement rates with your customers, but I'm not sure if it is actually really adding something to the products this far.
Yeah, I mean, you guys would know this better than I do, but when was the last time someone said to you, I really wish my insurance company would engage with me more, I really want to like talk to them on a more regular basis? Or
Don't get me wrong. I believe that insurance companies have to play a bigger role. I just think they haven't really found the right concept, yeah, the right concept, right? Discovery was super successful in South Africa, but if you look at the South African market and the way they rolled out this vitality was, you know, the culture is different. You cannot take the same product and, you know, roll it out in Asia. You need to find something that resonates with the people and the culture in the different markets, and I think that's what they still have to figure out. The right way here. They're just adding more and more services, but I'm, as far as I know, the engagement rates are not that great yet.
Yeah, it's just curious to me that people would want their insurance companies to know, like, that they're not exercising and that they're not taking full advantage of their ClassPass membership. I don't know. Again, just interesting to me.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we've finished for today. That was kind of awesome. Does anybody else have anything they want to add, or are we done for today?
I also have only 13% battery left on my laptop, so I think it's time to stop.
Okay. You two are awesome as usual. Rahul, Teresa, thank you so much for doing this again.
Thank
this
you was guys. Awesome. Take care.
See you soon.
Thanks. Bye.